Our next installment of Lectionary Lunch comes to us from the Gospel according to St. John, the 18th chapter, and we'll be looking at verses 33 through 37. The unit of text is a part of the Gospel's accounting of the trial scene before Pilate. It's perhaps helpful for us to contextualize the unit of text, to note where it appears in the trial narrative of the Gospel of John. It's helpful, I think, to notice that Jesus' trial in the Gospel of John appears in three stages, actually. First, Jesus is tried before Annas, the father-in-law of Caiaphas. Annas is, in a manner of speaking, the emeritus high priest, and Caiaphas, you know, has his current position as the current high priest through some historical circumstances that involved, Caiaphas marrying into, or at least establishing a relationship with the family of Annas. He's the son-in-law of Annas, Caiaphas is. It's a curious bit of information that John provides, especially with his trial narrative, that begins then with Annas, the father-in-law. Then Jesus goes before Caiaphas, the son-in-law and current high priest. Then the last stage of Jesus' threefold trial involves Jesus being before the reigning, occupying authority as personified in the person of Pilate. So the first two stages of the threefold trial involve Jewish interlocutors. The final stage of the threefold trial is a particularly extended narrative, providing us with a description of Jesus' trial before the Roman governor Pilate. There, as early as verse 28 in chapter 18, we have the opportunity to see Pilate going out to engage the Jewish establishment, coming back in again, over and over again, to engage Jesus. This is happening, actually. The going out, the coming back in, the location is the Praetorium. But the leadership is not inside with Pilate, in the company of Jesus. They are outside because the occasion is the Passover. And it's verses 25 to 28 now, which tell us that when Jesus was taken to the Praetorium, the establishment Jews stayed on the outside, refrained from going into the Praetorium, lest they be defiled and thus prevented from eating the Passover. That Passover was happening throughout the night and would end with the rising of the sun, according to usual Jewish custom. As long as the establishment could see Jesus condemned to die and taken off to be crucified before the rising of the sun, they could return to their homes or to certain designated locations for the purpose of eating the Passover before the rising of the sun. This, by the way, is why chapter 9, verse 14 mentions the sixth hour as the hour of Jesus' condemnation and his being sent out to be crucified. There, the narrative indicates that the establishment Jews who hoped to eat the Passover before the rising of the sun actually failed to do so. So in their zeal to feast upon Jesus, they lost their own opportunity to make good on their intention to eat the Passover before the rising of the sun. We should be thinking of chapter 2, verse 17. The zeal of your house will consume me. That suggestive psalm passage recalled by the disciples early on in the telling of this gospel story is here now coming to pass with the establishment Jews forsaking their own opportunity to eat their Passover in favor of dogging Jesus throughout the night in order to see him condemned and executed. There's great irony then in the fact that things transpired in this way throughout the night of the final Passover, the night of that Passover that should have been recognized by all but was not. Whether one, in fact, eats the Passover that all Israel was observing that night, or in fact recognizes that the true Passover is to be eaten as one embraces Jesus in his readiness to walk the walk of the cross and to suffer and die for us all. Whether the possibility is one or the other, the establishment Jews do neither. The sun rises with the sixth hour. Jesus is condemned to die and sent out. And these Jews, these establishment personalities, see their intention for Jesus realized, but in all of it, they miss the Passover. So, you know, in the context of those greater things happening here, we read in verses 33 to 37 of the first of three engagements involving Pilate and Jesus. Pilate goes out to talk to the establishment Jews. He comes back in to talk to Jesus, into the praetorium, that is. He goes back out again because the establishment Jews are refusing to come in. He comes back in again to speak with Jesus. Out he goes four times. In he comes three times. So, you know, the balance of the design of the trial scene is impressive, worthy of note. Jesus is tried in three stages, first before Annas, first then before Caiaphas, then before Pilate. As Jesus is keeping the faith, Peter in all of this is abandoning the faith. At the very end of this whole process, in the third stage, before Pilate, Pilate's own engagement of Jesus itself involves three installments of the conversation, of the interrogation, of the trial. This verses 33 to 37 then is the first installment of the threefold trial of Jesus before Pilate. Verse 33. So he's you know, the first thing that happens with this first installment is that Pilate is indicated as having entered back into the praetorium. Pilate, ha Pilatos, down the way a bit in the verse here, entered into eis eilthen, is just the aorist indicative form of eis erchomai. Entered then, un, again, palin, into the praetorium, eis ta praetorion, and summoned, kai ephonesen, Jesus, ton Jesun. Ephonesen here is just an aorist indicative form of phoneo. And he said, kai epen, to him, auto. So Pilate is speaking to Jesus. Pilate asks a question. Su a, are you the king, ha basileus, of the Jews? ton eudaion. Well, yes, before Annas, Caiaphas, and Pilate, one of the prevailing concerns has to do with the whole question of Jesus' apparent intention to assert regarding himself that he is king. Before the Jews, of course, the whole question of Jesus' kingship is a messianic question. Before Pilate, however, it's a slightly different question. If Pilate is asking the question, "Are you a king?" what Pilate wants to know is if Jesus has any intention to set himself up as a competing authority over against the authority of Rome, over against the authority of Caesar. The Jews want to know if Jesus is a false king, that is to say, a false Messiah. Pilate wants to know if Jesus, you know, Pilate's only concern, that is, as a response, a person with responsibility in the region for maintaining the authority and the established order of the Roman occupation of the region. Pilate wants to know if Jesus is any threat to Rome's presence in the region, to Rome's desire to maintain its own established preferred order for the region. You know, Pilate then, in usual terms, is doing his job to be an appropriate judge in the matter according to Roman law. Annas and Caiaphas, of course, are acting differently. Their concern has to do with, you know, a same need to judge Jesus in terms of Jewish law. So depending on who's asking the questions, then Jesus is responding to very different concerns, and it's actually the ebb and the flow of this trial scene involving first Jewish interests, then Roman interests, with Jesus responding to each set of questions. Sometimes the questions are the same questions, but they don't reflect the same concerns. And in all of this, the establishment Jews are engaging, you know, are responding not just to Jesus, but they're also engaging Pilate, attempting to secure from Pilate what they wish. Pilate, at the same time, is responding both to Jesus and to, you know, the leadership of the Jewish people, attempting to secure his concerns. So, you know, a delightful play of interests here involving three points of view is very much, the narrative and at stake with all of this, with verses 33 to 37, of course. Pilate now and Jesus are after each other. So Pilate enters into the praetorium and summons Jesus and says to him, actually asks him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" You know, otherwise put, "Are you a threat to Rome's established place in this region? Are you a threat to anything that Rome cares about?" Well, Jesus responds to that question with his own question. Apocrythe Jesus, Jesus answered. A clause of direct discourse follows. Actually, Jesus' response is fairly true to the dynamic of the engagement. If this ebb and flow is going on involving Jewish interests and Roman interests, you know, and Jesus is responding to a fairly plain question, but now it's coming from a different person representing a different interest. Jesus' first interest in this most recent engagement will be to establish which set of concerns he's being actually asked to respond to. So Jesus asks, you know, responds to a question with a question, you know, which sometimes serves a valuable purpose. He asks, are you saying this, tuta leges? I'm sorry, we should include su in this. Su is emphatic, right? The personal pronoun is not required when it's supplied here. It is, in fact, emphatic. Su is the subject. Are you, su, saying, leges, this, tuta, from yourself, apa se autu, or, a, are, have others, aloi, spoken to you, apon soi, that's just an aorist of lego there, apon, have others spoken to you, soi, concerning me, peri emu. So Jesus is essentially responding to Pilate's question with the question, whose set of concerns are we should I be responding to here? Pilate's perhaps somewhat exasperated response is to say, this shouldn't be, is to suggest with the verse that follows, this shouldn't be, an open question to you. I mean, who's talking to you right now? Am I a Jew? No, I'm not a Jew. I'm the Roman governor. You respond to me in terms of who I am and in terms of what's required right now. I'm the person asking the questions here. I'm the judge. You respond to this judge and his set of questions. So Pilate answered, Apokrithe ha Pilatos. I am not a Jew, am I? Me te ego judaios eme. Me te expects the, especially in this circumstance, expects a negative response. I'm no Jew. You respond to me in terms of the things that I represent and I care about, is Pilate's response. Ta ethnos tason. A noun followed by a possessive adjective, the possessive adjective in attributive position, more specifically, repeat position. Notice the repetition of the definite article, ta ethnos, ta son. When constructions of this kind are often recognized as reflecting the Semitic orientation of the author, what we should also be noticing about the construction is that it is often emphatic. Your nation and the priests, its priests, kai hoi archeres. Well, yeah, it's been a priestly interrogation, first Annas, then Caiaphas. The priests are still around. They're still waiting for the dirty deed to be done. So they're still in evidence. In fairly natural fashion, the trial is happening in this way. But there's probably also additional irony to the fact that the priests are again mentioned. The priesthood is again, in evidence here. With the Passover going on throughout the night and with Jesus bringing a final Passover, these priests intent upon feasting upon Jesus are themselves not eating their own Passover. Instead, they're hoping to see Jesus, eliminated. Back to the text then. Your nation, ta ethnos ta son, and the priests, kai hoi archeres, have handed you over, paredokan, is just an aorist form of paradidomi. The direct object is se, have handed you, se, to me, emoi. What, te, is an interrogative, have you done, epoi esas? Pilate is doing his job, which doesn't mean that he's a sympathetic character, but Roman law requires him to be, at least a, more often than not, that is, an impartial judge in terms of Roman law, not Jewish concerns, of course, in terms of maintaining the local peace and the established order of the Roman occupation of the region. You know, his job is to offer all parties a so-called fair hearing according to Roman law. So what he wants to hear from the accused at this point, but it's not because he's a sympathetic personality. He can be as brutal as any other, you know, Roman representative of the empire. Later on, when Pilate wants to let Jesus go, we can have the impression that Pilate is being entirely sympathetic to Jesus personally. But no, Pilate will not have any desire to give the Jews what they want or to exhibit brutality in this situation unless his purposes and Rome's interests are served. So he will be, you know, somewhat dispassionate, actually, until this matters to Rome. And so he wants to find out. He's working to find out if any of this is a concern to him as the governor of the region, to find out whether any of this is a concern to him as the representative of Rome. Now, later on, you know, the Jewish leadership will get Pilate to you know, respond to its desire in all of this by threatening to accuse Pilate of treason himself for not eliminating a regional throne pretender. They'll accuse Pilate. They'll threaten Pilate with accusing him of being himself guilty of treason before Caesar for not getting rid of a throne pretender. That'll get his attention and get him to respond. But so far in things right now, he's not seeing any reason why he needs to be concerned with this religious fanatic, you know, this set of religious issues with this philosopher of the truth. So, you know, he asks the good question, what have you done that you know, has provoked any of this? What have you done that's a concern, that should or should not be a concern to me? Jesus answered, Apokrithē Jesus, my kingdom, hey Basileia, hey Eme. Again, the instance of repeat position and the use of the possessive adjective is emphatic. My kingdom is not uk estin of this world, ek tu kosmu tutu. If, here comes a contrary to fact condition, introduced with the conditional particle a, if a, my kingdom were of this world, ek tu kosmu tutu, ein, there's the verb, if my kingdom, hey Basileia, hey Eme, were of this world, ek tu kosmu tutu, my servants, it's again emphatic, hoi heperetai, hoi emoi, my servants would put up a resistance. Here we're looking at the imperfect of agonizomai. Here it's agonizonta. My servants would put up a resistance, would put up a fight, agonizanta, on, in order that, hina, I not be handed over, me paradotho, to the Jews. And if I hadn't been handed over to the Jews, I wouldn't be before you right now, would I, is his suggestion. Paradotho is of paradidome. It's subjunctive because the verb or the conjunction hina takes the subjunctive. Dotho is aorist subjunctive passive, hence the translation, in order that I not be handed over to the Jews. But now, nun de, or at the present time at least, my kingdom, emphatic, he Basileia, he Eme, uk estin, is not from here, entuthen. So, you know, as he should, Jesus faithfully responds to, or rightly responds to Rome's question, to Pilate's question, as configured in terms of Rome's concern. Rome's concern has to do with the question of whether Jesus means to set himself up as a competing authority, and Jesus' response to that is that Rome really has nothing to worry about at the present time. That's entirely truthful, because Jesus' kingdom come will be a kingdom in hiddenness until Jesus comes again with the advent of the not yet to judge the living and the dead and to inaugurate a kingdom in all of its manifest fullness, which will eliminate all other kingdoms. So at a later time, Jesus' kingdom will indeed be a kingdom of this world. It will be the only reigning authority in this world. But in the present of Jesus and Pilate, here in chapter 18, it's entirely correct for Jesus to be saying, at the present time, my kingdom is not from here. Well, at no time is it, in fact, a kingdom coming from this world, of this world, the way kingdoms happen in this world. It is instead a kingdom that comes from above. So in that sense too, his kingdom is not into then from here. Yes, what Jesus says is true in many and various ways, the ways that the Pilate cares for any of this to matter or not. Jesus allays, in a manner of speaking, the concern of Pilate by saying, am I a king? Implied, response, yes, but my kingdom's not like any kingdom of this world. My kingdom is not from here. Now, Pilate is savvy to notice that Jesus has at least implicitly suggested that he is, in fact, a king with his response. So Pilate, will not let this one go. He wants to know exactly what Jesus means by that. So here comes Pilate's next statement. Then Pilate said to him, "Epen un auto ha Pilatos." Then, oikun, a king you are, basileus esu, so have you not just admitted to the suggestion that you are a king? Jesus answered, apekrithe ha Jesus, you, su, are saying, leges, that I am a king. Actually, all Israel is, and Rome too, is currently responding to the suggestion that Jesus has been out and about doing things and saying things indicating that he is a king. Everyone is kind of, responding to this suggestion, wondering in what sense Jesus may or may not be a king. Perhaps this is what Jesus is implying first with his most recent response to Pilate. You are saying, leges, that I am a king. Hate, basileus, amen. For this reason, estuta, I, ego, have been begotten. Gegenemai, he is the begotten one. And for this reason, kai estuta, I have come, eleutha, into the world, eston kosmon, in order that I might testify, hina martyreso, to the truth, te aletheia. Everyone who is, pas haon, the substantival participle of eme, here is the subject of kue, pas haon, everyone who is of the truth, ektes aletheias, listens, kue, to my voice, the verb takes the genitive, mou tes phonēs. Now, you know, thus far the text, you know, our text for our consideration ends here with Jesus saying this. We probably want to look ahead a little bit to notice that Pilate's not very impressed with, or not very, you know, shows a kind of a significant disinterest in the whole question of Jesus being a king of truth, a kingly philosopher of truth, a person who, you know, whose principal concern has to do with the issue of truth. You know, if that's what Jesus is, Pilate's response is to ask the question, what is truth? Who's ever gotten a handle on that? And how, you know, in what sense does that represent a concern to me, a concern to Rome, a concern to anything that Rome cares about? This will be of no concern to Pilate that Jesus is a royal philosopher of truth and means to inaugurate truth, you know, to establish truth and disciples of truth. You know, Pilate's going to go out and say to the Jews, I see no fault in him. In other words, he's no threat to Rome. I don't have a dog in this fight. You people take care of him. I have no interest in having a part to play in this thing. He of course is right about that. But what he doesn't see is what the reader knows about Jesus' statement. If Jesus means to be the cosmic one who inaugurates truth in all the world, he's saying that he means to radically create the world, redefine reality in terms of an abiding divine truth that is the truth of the age which is to come. So, you know, wow. Let's be sure to notice that at the very end. You know, in a way, he's saying, you don't need to worry about me because I'm not a threat to you at the present time. But at the same time, he says, I'm coming after you too and everything that Rome represents. And when I'm done with my work, with the advent of the not yet, you will no longer exist. The only reality in this world that will exist is the reign and the rule of God in the person of God's Son. So with that, I need to leave off. We've spent more than usual time looking to our text for this time's consideration. May God bless that consideration of his holy word and keep us in it until the coming of his Son and the final completion of his work with the full and manifest advent of his kingdom, his reign, and his rule over all things. And may God keep you in the same. Amen.